This is the smell of a warm 3-day-old egg salad sandwich in a wimpy trash bag.
Wimpy, wimpy, wimpy!
Blech! And this is the smell of that same sandwich in a hefty, ultra-strong trash bag with new Fabuloso lemon scent.
Hefty, hefty, hefty!
Smell the difference? When life gives you stinky, get hefty, ultra-strong with new Fabuloso lemon scent. It smells like clean, freshly picked lemons. So no matter what's inside your trash, you can stop the stink and smell the lemon.
The Homance Chronicles.
The female equivalent of a bromance.
So many poor choices.
But so many good times.
But so many poor choices.
This is the Homance Chronicles, and I'm Sarah.
And I'm Nicole.
My spirit's broken, and Nicole's back is almost broken. It's a great day. It's a great day.
Yeah. I know you, that was like a sing-songy robot. It was an interesting one.
Yeah. It's been one of those days where it's not terrible, but it's not great. It's like the NPC of life, like the day. It's just moving about the cabin as normal, but nothing really remarkable to say anything about.
It's fine. Boring is fine.
Well, I'm also mildly traumatized by the lions. So I'm not going to lie to you. That took so much of my energy and effort for emotional purposes yesterday watching that game. And I woke up with a game hangover, like emotional hangover from watching it.
Yeah, it was nerve wracking for sure. And I went and met up with some people at the bar and left at halftime or like beginning of the third. And I was like, okay, well, I'll see you guys for Super Bowl.
Yeah. Well, thank you for jinxing it. Appreciate
that's
that.
What, yeah, I basically received text messages how it was my fault that the Lions turned into a completely different team in the third quarter. At one point, my brother texted me and he's like, well, that's it. And I hadn't even really gotten myself like back home and situated. Like, I took the dogs out and stuff. And then before you know it, my brother's like, that's it. And I'm like, what?
Yep.
What happened? When I left, it was like 24-7.
8 minutes. That's all it took. 8 minutes. Hey, I mean, fuck it. That was just practice for next year. It's all I'm going to say.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not really like a football fan. You know, Lions fandom has been in my family and it's kind of like, you don't have a choice.
No,
you don't have a choice. But I don't really, you know, watch football. So it is a moment, though. It was something that you wanted to be a part of. Like 100%. The energy at the bar is like on fire, you know? Yeah.
The fact that the whole Ford Field Stadium was packed with people watching the game just to be there. Like, I didn't realize that was an option until later on in the season because I would have totally gone down there. But, like, there's so many people out there, like that guy that was crying, you know, was because of his dad passing away. Like, that's me. That's a lot of us in this generation of people that watch this game called football, with the Lions being the star. Like, it's just such a cool time to be a fan and a cool time to see the city come together, regardless of where you're from, what you look like.
Well,
everybody's,
I mean, and
rocking,
to be quite frank,
Honolulu blue.
Yeah. Most of America was on the Lions side.
Yeah, because fuck the 49ers. Purdy had his time. Like, but whatever. We got this far and we know what we need to do next year. Kick field goals. Dan Campbell. So I am not calling it a defeat. It's just practice for next year. But yeah, I'm a little emotionally hungover from that. And it also impacted my hoe of history this week. I'm not going to lie to you. I was queued up to do women in football because at one point there was a women's professional football league, just like the baseball league that showed up, you know, for that movie. I can't remember what it's called.
A league of their own.
Yeah. Same thing happened in football. And I thought it would be so fun to do that. And I just got so upset. I said, never mind. And I went back to somebody that I started, but kind of didn't finish. But now here we are.
Okay. Well, it wasn't the women in football's fault.
Oh, I know that, but I'm just sad. Like, I'm emotionally hungover.
You're like, fuck them all.
I did yesterday. I was very upset. It was kind of funny because typically I'm the positive person in the relationship. I'm always like, oh, you know, it's okay. We'll do better next time. And he's usually the one that's like, I'm so upset. This is the end of the world. The sky is falling. And we switched roles last night. He was like, it's going to be okay. We got this far. And I was like, fucking pissed. I'm fucking pissed. Why didn't he do that? Like, I was the angry man throwing my hat at the TV. I didn't have a hat on and I'm not a man, but you know, you can understand. So yeah, we just had to move on.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, then we will move on to the hoe of history that you have selected for today.
Yes, we will. Are we ready? I'm ready.
So, ready.
How I came about this hoe, she's not even really a hoe. Well, okay, let me just say it. So I was at my sister's house in October timeframe, and we were, my mom's sister and I, my sister was working, my mom was sleeping, I think, and I was up doing some cooking or something. So I was listening to a show. And the show that I listened to named this lady. So I went ahead and looked her up, and I'm going to tell you the story. I don't want to give away too much just yet because it's crazy, kind of. So without further ado, this is Lucille Rixon, born Ingeborg Myrtle Elizabeth Erickson, and she was dubbed the youngest leading lady. She was born in August of 1910 on the 22nd in Chicago to Danish immigrants named Samuel and Ingeborg Nielsen Erickson. So I don't know about you, but this is the first time from that era I've seen a woman name her child after herself versus the man. You know what I mean? Like, typically you get the male juniors, but you don't get the female juniors. Well, she was a female junior.
That was popular. We've talked about it several times.
Oh, okay. Well, this is the first story. It's sticking now because it's the first story
that you've had to.
Yeah. You know.
I'm like, had to do it multiple times because I'm like, do you remember that one story where I was like, Mary Senior and Mary Junior?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I do now. See. But I think that Sarah's World, I'm one of those people that I have to go through the process to learn it, you know? I have to burn myself in order to learn it. It's hot. It's cool. It's a great time. Okay, so she was born in Chicago. She did have an older brother who was born in 1907. Both she and her brother Marshall were actually early actresses in silent films. So it kicks off with, by the time she could literally put her child in front of a camera, that's exactly what her mother did. She was just barely able to walk when mom started her modeling career for her by taking her to an agency and having her model for various publications. So in the early 1900s, like in the 1910s and 20s, photography was kind of like a budding industry, but models were the way, you know, for young women, especially, to kind of make it onto the scene. And her mom expected that this would be a decent revenue for her income revenue. So that's what she did. So by the time she was 5, she took her to the Essanay Studios where she signed her up for film work. And soon after, she was cast as Baby Erickson in The Million Dollar Baby that aired in 1915. So she was 5 by that time the movie came out. So you can imagine she had done a lot of work pre that movie. Just to build her portfolio up. And you can't even believe the pictures of her from when she was like a baby. It's creepy a little bit because they have lipstick on her. You can tell they did her hair. It's
really,
yes. So the first image that I found, I think might be the youngest image of her, is from a thing called Little Bit of Heaven. And again, it's like it's like Cupid style babies, like embracing each other. So it's like adult mannerisms, but very child images, you know, gross. And with this, all of this, you know, pedophilia stuff coming around, this is like the perfect opportunity to have this discussion. So As I write, this is also when questionable photos started surfacing. It seems like there was a real big push to make her baby seem older right from the jump. Like I said, she had makeup on, they curled her hair on purpose. By the time that she was actually 4 years old, she got rid of her like government name and went strictly by Lucille Rixon. She and her brother started off strong in their careers and became a revenue stream for the family just to straight up rely on.
Did it say what dad did for money? No,
but I imagine that mom was like wore the pants in the family, because as they neared the 1920s, they were on the rocks. I can't imagine why. This is Sarah assuming here that mom was pushing them to be workhorses and dad was like, I don't feel comfortable with this. I don't know if this is a good idea. And mom was like, well, what the fuck are you going to do to make this family money? And he was like, I guess nothing. And then she was like, well, fuck you, I'm leaving. That's Sarah's world, right? So by the time she was 8, her parents had actually split up and mom did move the kids to Hollywood at the request of Samuel Goldwyn. So, you know, the Goldwyn Productions movie production company, the Samuel Goldwyn, requested them to join him in Hollywood. And so
I hope that this is not a spoiler, but I was watching, God, Ollie, this is probably the most annoying thing for listeners, is when you're like, I was watching this one show with no description and I can't remember the title. But there were a lot of, I'll say, like 12 to 14 year olds who were dressed up and put lipstick on and like made to look like adults, and they were actually posing like partially nude and
ew,
stuff like that.
Well, yeah, so, no, I don't think she was definitely involved in that though.
Was she? Okay.
Oh yeah, 100%. There's another. Okay, remember the Mata Hari? Remember her? She had those really elegant outfits with those really big draping, like cloth, like she would drape over her whole body and it would be sheer and gorgeous, but, you know, captivating at the same. She has pictures of that, of her doing that when she was like a cherub child. Like, it's disgusting and a little disturbing. So, yes, yeah. I imagine she was part of that. But as she got older, she actually, at 11 years old, was asked to star as a female lead in a comedy series called The Adventure of Edgar Pomeroy, which had about 12 installments. And this is where it kind of really started for her. She was the leading female, and it kind of kickstarted like people paying attention to her, gave her an opportunity to really shine. Because again, not again, but she was the star, female star, but I don't think that there were a lot of other females in the actual series. I think it was a lot of boys. So she did, though, have a blast being herself. She was a child on set at the time, so she was with other kids. She could play, be rambunctious, you know, just really kind of hang out and be a kid. Here's the crazy part, though. This is the part that just blows me away to this day. She was so much more mature for her age than I think people, well, not people, but I think that she should have been. By the time she was 12 years old, she wrote a letter to the director, E. Mason Hopper, calling him the most patient child's director I have ever known. I wrote, sis, you're 12. Like, there's no way. But she had been in the industry for long enough and had so much experience at that point, she felt it necessary to handwrite a thank you letter to this director, which is really the only handwriting you can do. But then, like, looking at the picture of the letter itself, her handwriting is impeccable. It does not look like a fucking child wrote this by any stretch of and like the words she was using, insane.
Well, because she's got to read all the time for scripts.
Right. But like,
I mean, her vocabulary is going to be much more widespread than a normal kid. And I'm sure she has to make like edits and changes and things to scripts, you know?
Yeah, I don't know. Who knows? All I know is that like,
and she's probably schooled on set.
I don't know. Probably. But her like the capability that she had to just comprehend adult version of life was there way young.
Mm.
So she was absolutely perceived as older, acted older. And after the next gig where she and some of her castmates were actually cast, it's called The Old Nest. It was a film based on a short story by Rupert Hughes. She was taken on a tour around the country to promote the Edgar series. And so in that time, she was, you know, traipsed around the country, trying to get everybody to watch this show. You know, it was like a road show, basically. Mm-hmm. Super rough schedule. But this child was so diligent about documenting her entire life in her journal. It is unreal. There are pages and pages and pages of handwritten memories that are accompanied by images taken of her in different places with different people. And each photo had like a creative caption under it. So for sure, she was spending her time documenting all this stuff, making sure that she got her pictures. She would cut them out, put them like paste them into this book. So
not
she had
like Dear Diary.
No, she had like
my mom was
yeah.
Mean
she had
me
a scrapbook.
Today.
Yeah, Dear Diary. Jimmy and I. He likes Susie so much. Yeah. No.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, so like a lot of the history that this girl is actually captured in her own writings in her own journal. So after the series and the short gig, she appeared in more than 12 films from 1920 to 1921 alone. Like, again, remember, producing a film wasn't that much work back then. There wasn't a lot of digitizing. It was just shoot, compile, produce. Like, shoot, compile, produce. Yeah. So she was just going and going and going. And in my head, they were overextending her at that point. She's still a child. She doesn't know how to protect herself.
Yeah.
She doesn't know that she has to go to bed. You know, all of these things.
Yeah. And except her mom's sitting there going like, we got to get the money while it's good. You would never know when we're going to get another gig.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly. Because these young women and children, you know, female children, were not making a lot of money. So she's in the front of the camera more and more at the hand of all the adults around her. By the time she was 12, she was perceived as a full grown adult by most and was cast in the comedy called The Married Flapper in 1992 or 1922. By then, her opportunity started coming in droves, and by 22, she was contracted with actor and director Marshall Neelian, who cast her in a successful drama, The Stranger's Banquet, which she was alongside some of the industry's leading adult names. By 1923, she was off to the races playing the lead in a movie called Rendezvous with Marshall. So she was not quite 13 years old. The studio press declared she was 16, though, calling her the youngest leading lady in the movies. In this movie, she played a deaf peasant and unhappy wife of a Russian official named Vera. 13.
Oh, my God.
Yes. Marshall Neelian. 13. One visiting reporter wrote, those Edgar commies were Lucille's only childhood, the only chance to play with her children, with children her own age. That is what makes her different. It is almost uncanny how different she is. It makes you sorry. It makes you glad. You see those long pigtails flying in the wind and cheeks snapping with bright color. Instead of the all-day session playing, you long to see those pigtails flying in the wind and cheeks snapping with bright color instead of the all day season playing the abused wife of a horrid Russian, interspersed with reading about Bernda Hart talking with older men and women. So because she was cast as an older person in these movies, she was surrounded by older people. Mm-hmm. So her social topics were all those that were very heavy, and I can't imagine she fully understood the depth of all of them as she was talking. So another mildly disturbing role in 1923 was her role as Ginger in the John Griffith Ray directed drama Human Wreckage, a drug prevention film produced by and starring actress Dorothy Davenport. This film was made in reaction to the death of Davenport's husband, actor Wallace Reed, as a result of his morphine addiction. Again, she's 12. 13 max at this time. These are topics no child should ever have to fucking deal with, let alone try to interpret to be an actress for. Like, what the fuck? Shit just keeps getting grosser, though. Her two besties.
Yeah, at the same time, I'm thinking about current shows. You know? Right.
Oh, yeah. I mean, and I'm thinking this is probably all just a pattern that we're watching happen now in real time.
And like, think about like The Wire, right? Like,
yeah,
it was mostly kids.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, in a lot of movies and television, they try to cast people who are older, who are adults that just happen to look younger. You know, they have 30-year-olds playing high school students.
Hilarious to me.
But I mean, that's partially the reason why. I mean, also, there's child labor laws now, and I don't know what time those kicked in, but there's children are only allowed to have so many hours on a set per day. And so when you use children who are actually children, it right. impedes your production. So part of the using adults who look like children is a way around it as well.
Right. I mean, but just look at the show Glee. Look at what they did with those people. Holy fuck.
Yeah.
What a nightmare.
Right. But I imagine in her time, there were no child protection laws.
Absolutely not. Not even close to it. So things keep getting grosser and grosser and grosser. Her two besties at the time were Sydney Chaplin and Marshall Neelian, who were known in the industry as skirt chasers and bad boys. In December of 1923, the Billboard newspaper noted Lucille and Chaplin had recently married.
Damn.
Disgusting.
How, though?
Disgusting. There were no laws around children.
I feel like by that time, there was a minimum.
I'm sure age.
She probably lied.
Well, no, the studio. Lied, right? So, like, the studios back in that era had more control over people than parents sometimes. So it could be that he married her to keep her age under wraps. You know what I mean? So he could take... There's so much turmoil and darkness in this story that just never came to light because of the shady shit that was going on. It's pretty crazy. So in the first 7 months of 1924, she was insanely busy. She ended up completing 10 films in the span of time. Images taken at that point show her looking just straight the fuck up, exhausted. You can see the bags under her eyes, even with the cameras they took pictures of her with in that era. It finally caught up to her and she was just exhausted. She was, and I quote, fighting for her life while showing face in public. She was breaking down in private. So at that point, mom knew, she could tell, and shame on her for not telling sooner. Mom decided to send her into seclusion, hoping it would help her daughter recover. So at that point, she was having a nervous breakdown. She was malnourished. She wasn't sleeping. She was having a fucking time. Like, complete breakdown.
And how old is she at this point?
Oh, in 1924, she's 14.
Oh, God.
Yeah. So she desperately tried to keep the emotional, using air quotes, the emotional breakdown private, but it leaked and her mother offered zero information other than it's a nervous breakdown. That's all. No, she can't think of working now. Not for 4 months at least. She must have rest. Lots of it. After that, perhaps. Making freaking headlines that way. That's it. So Lucille's doctor was a little more candid. I'm going to read directly from it. Miss Rickson is a high-strung, enthusiastic girl full of ambition and energy. She crowded too much work into too short of a time and overtaxed her capacities. Other youthful stars have done the same thing. The result is that she has had a complete physical and nervous collapse, so complete that she has not rallied from it as she should. So she was in a bad way. Like,
yeah.
Total meltdown at this point.
Mm-hmm.
Her brother, Marshall, quit school so he could start helping the fam with finances. So where did all the fucking money go? If she's starring in all of these films, where's all of her money? She should have tons of it, right?
Well, that's not if she's paying every single bill.
Well,
not
that's
if she's
why
keeping the lights on.
Or that's why I think potentially Sidney Chaplin married her to take it from her. Again, I feel like there's so much more shit going on than they're willing to say. So, sadly, one morning, her mother was in her bedroom fixing her bed, and all of a sudden, the screams of Lucille forced her brother to drop whatever the fuck it was he was doing to run to her bedroom, where he would find his mother collapsed over Lucille in bed, fucking passed away from a heart attack just 2 days shy of her 45th birthday. Her mom died on her daughter. Like, was she sick? We have no idea. This caused Lucille to sink even deeper into her depression and had her Hollywood fam for support. Her father, he was around. He ended up moving and only lived a few minutes away from the family. So, like, I imagine mom kept him away, kept him giving him enough information just to feed him information, but really ultimately was like the orchestrator of everything.
Mm-hmm.
And like, he wanted to get back into the family, but she wouldn't let him. So
yeah, when I mean, she mom's passed away, creating all this undue stress and drama herself, hence a heart attack in your mm-hmm. mid 40s.
Right. Passing from a heart attack. So her dad, who did live nearby, did reappear to offer support. But Sarah's world, because mom probably badmouthed dad and kept him out as much as possible, the brother, Marshall, and Lucille asked actor Conrad Nagel and Rupert Hughes, remember from earlier, to become their guardians. And that's what they did.
Wow.
3 weeks after her mother's death, on the 13th of March, 1925, Lucille passed away at age 14 in her Hollywood home. There was an Episcopal service, and her ashes were placed with her mother's in the same urn and interred at the Forest Lawn Cemetery in Glendale, California. How did she pass? Several things. One option is she died of a broken heart. People think that without her beloved mother, she could no longer function, and she too passed away from just pure sadness. Nervous breakdown brought on by overwork. People think that, hey, she was overworked. Obviously, she had a nervous breakdown. That's that. Her death certificate said she had pulmonary tuberculosis, which I think is a straight up fucking lie. The bigger, more realistic potential is a botched abortion. She was married to Sydney. People think that Sydney got her pregnant, and when they went to abort it, there were complications from the abortion, and that's why she actually passed away. So we don't know what truly happened. All we know is that she's laying to rest with her mother in Glendale. After the fact, her brother went on to graduate law school with the support of his guardians. He did go on to become a successful lawyer in San Francisco. He also had a family with twin boys who followed in his footsteps, and they said that he has never spoken of the loss of his mother and sister, period. Wow. So she was used, probably abused, and exploited as fuck. So how did I come across this story? When I was at my sister's cooking, I was listening to a show called The Ghost Inside My Child. Season 1, episode 6 is called Silent Film Star, and it actually caught my attention. So
it's a television show?
Yes. And I watched it on Discovery Plus. I'm imagining you can just Google it and find out where to watch it, though. So the basis of this show, the premise is this family has a child from birth. There's something just not right with this child. And typically speaking, they have obsessions. They have stories of, you know, who they were before they were children. Essentially, it's reincarnation chatter. And this particular episode had a young girl. She was born and eventually became obsessed with silent films, actors and actresses from the 1920s. She was obsessed with this guy called Jack Pickett. And Jack Pickett, I think is his name, was actually a
child, not super child, but child actor alongside Lucille. And they were actually, his name was Jack Pickford, and they were actually cast in the movie The Hillbilly together. She was a leading lady, and he was really good to her. Another film they were in together was Galloping Fish. The reason I bring these two up is, as this younger girl was starting to get older, her mother started getting very curious about what was going on. She was very much into silent films. She would watch these movies. She would come out of her room. Like, at one day, she came out of her room and she had perfect pin curls in her hair with a bonnet. And, like, mom didn't teach her that. She didn't have any former education on how to do that, let alone the dexterity as a child to kind of do that to herself, right? So they started getting deeper and deeper into it. And finally, when the girl was old enough, she saw, I'm going to use air quotes, herself in a film and said, "That's me." And so her mother decided to take her to a historian. And the historian had, you know, the life, the death, the in-between, and validated a lot of these things that this young girl, her name is Amy, was basically stating, claiming that she remembered and recalled. So to this day, you can go watch the show. You can Google Lucille Rixon, Amy, and find the girl who is supposedly, which I believe is reincarnated, Lucille, and watch that show. And it's crazy bonkers, but I think it's real. And so that's how I came up with our story today.
What a ride.
Right? And like, the show doesn't necessarily say much about Lucille herself. It's obviously more geared towards the family, their experience, etc. So after watching that show and doing my research, yeah, it's very probable that that was a reincarnation situation. Just crazy. Crazy stuff. So Michael GanKarich.wordpress.com. I do believe that's the guy in the show. I didn't make that connection until I went back and watched the episode. Wikipedia and Encyclopedia Britannica. And then Beatrice Tonnensenart. Yep. Beatrice, TonnenSenart.com were my sources for this one today.
Well, that's incredibly sad.
Yeah.
Oh, man. I mean, okay. To come full circle with this Amy situation, are the other episodes in this show about other kids who think that they are reincarnated as someone else? So yes. Each episode features like a different
family and their child
person. Yep. Or whatever. Okay.
Two families were in each episode. So she shares an episode with another family whose son was born and he's like hearing impaired in one ear. It turns out they figured out who he was in a former life, and he actually fell off a roof, hit that side of his head, passed away. And when he was born again, he had issues with that side of his head hearing wise. So there's like little, there's instances throughout the show where it's like crazy.
I mean, there's so many times documented where kids are clued into spirit world, maybe not a reincarnation, but saying that's so and so, and they see a picture, and there's no way they could know who they are,
right?
Because they're not old enough, you know. Like, it's, you know,
yeah, that's
shows Larry who passed away or something, and he's like, "Oh, I saw him last night in my room," or whatever, you know.
Yeah.
He told me his name is Larry, and then the parents are like, "How did you know that?"
Yeah, I mean, there's one episode where they take a kid, one of the kids, to the living, like, he had been a war hero and he passed away during the war, and they took him to the
former life's sister who was still alive. And as soon as he entered the room, you could see his demeanor shift to what I have to assume was his previous role in life. And he started talking to her like they had, because they were brother and sister, like they had their own language. He was using the words they used. He called her the nickname. He called her like right off the rip.
Mm.
So like, it's just, it's kind of a crazy show. A little heavy, but it's a good one.
Yeah. So back to our Hoe of History now, mm-hmm. our own show.
Hello.
Do you think that one of the other options, I guess, or maybe this is tied to them saying that Lucille had a mental or nervous breakdown, is basically suicide?
It could be that too.
Because like, I feel like that's just a nice way to say she killed herself.
Yeah. No, I don't know if she was harming herself. That's a good question.
Well, she may not have been harming herself, but if they're saying like she died from a nervous breakdown, well, how do you die from a nervous breakdown?
Right. Her heart stops or something like that. I don't know if she, yeah, I don't, there was actually nothing about self-harm or completion of suicide there, but it's a very large possibility because it's the 20s. Who fucking knows? They're a bunch of fucking liars.
Yeah. I mean, if I was in her shoes, I would see it as a viable option.
Yeah.
To be honest.
Potentially. I mean, I don't know. Again, she crashed and burned. So she was a falling star. Super bright. Crashed really fast. Poor thing.
Oh, God. That was a sad one today.
Yeah, sorry.
And that you wanted to do that one over the women in football?
I told you it was.
I feel like the women in football would be much more uplifting
for everybody else.
Get you out of the funk, man.
Yeah. Oh. I'd like to think that her story, which is, you know, fairly well documented, but kind of the same story, helped improve the conditions for child stars in the following times, but I imagine that will never be attributed directly to her passing.
Right. Yeah. Well, either way, thank you for sharing with us today and taking us on that little journey on how you found out who she was. I swear, if somebody was to say, guess what Sarah's watching, or guess where Sarah found this information, I'd be like, I
have no idea.
It could be anything. Truly, it could be.
Oh, she did have some money. So her estate and savings were divided amongst relatives and coworkers. Her father received a quarter of her life insurance and became the administrator of state. Rupert Hughes and Conrad Nagel were awarded the remaining amount for the benefit of Marshall Erickson, brother of the deceased, and the two were named as his guardians. So yeah. She was in so many fucking movies. Like, I can't even, 8 from 1920.
Yeah. They were just churning those bad boys out, though.
Like, around 50 movies. That's insane.
That is insane. Considering she only lived to be 14.
Right. She was in more movies than, like, some actors and actresses today that are just...
over their lifetime, yeah, because it's a much different process now.
Right. But yes.
And way more competitive, probably.
Oh, absolutely. I'm sure TikTok is a thing. You can see it there.
Well, is it time for Atta Girls?
It really is. It is time for Atta Girls.
Atta Girls are where we pat ourselves on the back for something good that we've done or something good that's happened to us. I don't know why I had to yawn at that moment. Apologies.
Damn it. I can't stop.
Sorry, now it's contagious. Now whoever's listening is yawning to you. I'm so sorry. That was a weird spot to yawn.
I'm not sorry.
So my Atta Girl is that I've had a couple of situations recently where I have had a little ting in my gut, if you will, like a little like being from your intuition. Listen to it. And I don't know if there would have been like a big problem or not, but basically avoided issues by being the person to be like, wait, time out. Something's weird. Something's weird here. Just even, but like small things. Like I was sent over some paperwork and it had a loan number on it for my existing mortgage. And I'm looking at this number. Now, granted, like my loan is paid automatically. I don't really have my loan number memorized, nor do I see it that often. But because of doing all the paperwork, I mean, I've seen it recently. But anyway, so I look at that loan number and I'm like, I should check this. I did. It was wrong.
Oh, no. See, I need to start listening to that gut because I was like, I should buy carrots and I didn't. And I need carrots. Nope, that was celery. I should buy salad dressing. And I didn't. I needed fucking salad dressing. Like, I need to tune in at the grocery store. I don't know why I don't.
In life, in general.
I mean, it's right there. It literally is sitting there telling you, you need to get this. You need to get this. And you're like, bleh, that's strange. Wonder why I'm thinking about salad dressing. Like, duh, Sarah, fuck.
That's what I mean. It's been happening a lot lately where it's like, you should double check that.
At a girl.
You should maybe look that one up real quick before you put your name on there.
At a girl.
Yeah. So intuition's been strong lately. And I don't know why it's stronger now than
Pluto
has been. Maybe it is Pluto.
Fucking Pluto.
Pluto is in Aquarius as of January 20th.
Of Aquarius.
So it very well could be. There's something going on for sure. Whether it's the universe or the planets aligning, or I don't know, but I've had quite a few like little ding ding ding.
Oh my goodness. Glad a girl. I'm glad that you've avoided.
Thanks.
Potentials. Thanks. I don't even know what you avoided yet.
I don't know what I avoided either, to be honest, but I just like, I was talking to my realtor and I was like, this number is wrong. And he's like, well, you can, you know, still submit it anyway and we can change it. And I'm like, no, I'm not comfortable with that. I'd rather just change it and only sign one and not have like the potential for confusion.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so not only am I like getting the ding, listening to it, doing the work, but then now I'm also having to defend
the ding,
right? Mm-hmm. And so it's a lot technically to follow it all the way through.
It's the age of Aquarius. Mm-hmm. Amount just unsurmountable patience. Good. Happy. Glad for you. Atta girl. Mine I feel like could be triumphant in my own right. So we moved into this house a year and some months ago. I am just envisioning the former owner's uncle being over here doing his thing.
What?
My kitchen cabinetry is, I'm assuming, just a bunch of spare parts put together because none of the cabinets match. Yeah, Tio. He came
homeowner's uncle. Like, who, what?
Yeah, I got a bunch of like Tio specials going on in here. No, yeah. Tio specials. Like, you know. And I didn't, unfortunately, get an inspection on this house when we moved into it because we were running out of time. So I have no idea what I'm up against. We just, you know, I don't recommend it. It was a poor move. But at the time, I didn't get a ding. So I just went with it.
Oh boy.
Yeah. So I
feel
know,
like a home inspection, whether you get a ding or not, like it's my really advice important. Is to just do it.
Yeah, just do it. Take the time. And I don't think I would have, I think that we are running out of time for somebody to land. Like I think Seth's loan or lease was up. And if we would have gotten the thing, he would have had to pay for another month. You know, just a bunch of nonsense.
Yeah, I remember lecturing you on this and saying, just pay for the other month.
Yeah. Yep. So we didn't.
Just, yeah.
And I don't know what I'm dealing with here, but the cupboards, the cabinetry, it seems that it's starting to pull away from the wall. And it very well could be because the weather, mm-hmm. Redone it, and things are finally starting to settle.
Mm-hmm.
I have granite countertops, and the seam from the black splash. There's like a piece of granite that goes over the top of the counter on the mm-hmm. back wall. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And that seam has started to pull apart behind the sink. So I was not okay with that, of course, because it'll mm-hmm. ruin everything if it gets wet, moldy, and starts to get water damaged.
Mm-hmm. Well, and now you're the Kulk queen after you did your
bathroom. Of course, because I felt I was feeling strong, you know, getting that one seam in the bathroom. So took it upon myself this weekend to take everything off the countertop, take all the old caulk that's in there that looks like it may have been separated and stretched apart. I went and looked underneath the cabinets to see, is it secured? Do I need to screw anything tighter? I looked and there's like a bunch of shims that are all willy-nilly under there. And I'm like, okay, it could just be sagging now.
Mm-hmm.
So we went ahead and redid the caulk, and there's a 1/4-inch gap where I don't believe there was one at all at one point. But we caulked it up good, solid, and we're back. I redid my soap dispenser with a fresh seal on that little new gasket there. And yeah, things seem to be dried. We'll see how it goes. It's ugly as sin. I hate it.
But you didn't use a clear one?
It's sealed. I did. It's just so thick.
Oh. It looks like it's acrylic or something.
Yes.
Yeah.
Bright blue acrylic. But it's sealed.
Yeah.
Ugly as fuck, but it's sealed. So we're going to see the summertime what happens if things settle and revert back to what they may have been prior. We'll find out. But we're going to get a contractor in here. And I might actually end up splurging on a home inspection before the year is over. Because I'm so fucking nervous at this stage. I don't know what happened anymore. And I'm not trying to guess. I don't want any surprises. But yeah, my cupboard faces do not all match. They are literally two separate cupboards. So.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I have a great home inspector if you'd like. There's some things that they're not going to call out in a home inspection, like the fact that your cupboards are mismatched, but
no, I don't
you
care
know.
About that.
Yeah, I know. But,
if they're securely fastened to the wall, I'm hoping is something they would come back with yes or no, or I don't understand truly why the face of my cupboards are popping off. And I recognize now that like they used spare parts for everything. I don't believe anything was created custom. I think they went in there and were like, hey, looks like there is some leftover cabinetry. Can I have that, please? And then they just took it and used it. Like when I moved in, all the cupboards had to be redone so that they were opening in the right way. You know, they're all opening backwards. Like, it was strange.
That's odd.
It was, you know, like when you go under the sink, they open like doors. Mm-hmm. Together outward,
mm-hmm.
but they were on the opposite sides, so it was like the gull wings on a door to get into my cupboards. Sirs, I don't know what you were thinking, but that's not it. So that was a fun time.
Oh boy. Home ownership.
Don't do it.
I mean, it depends on what you want to do it for. I like it. That's I like cool. projects, though.
I do, too. I certainly do, but not on my daily driver. You know what I'm saying? I'm at that sink more than I'm in my bed. Fuck, I'm not trying to screw that up.
Yeah. Yeah, I hear you. Well, if you guys liked what you heard today, please rate, review, subscribe. You can request a Hoe of History on Instagram at homans_chronicles, or you can email us homanspodcast@gmail.com. You can get your homance merch on Etsy at my Etsy shop, NicoleBonneville.etsy.com. And you can join the closed group on Facebook, The Homance Chronicles, A Judgment-Free Zone, if you feel like it.
Right.
So I think that's everything.
It is. Homance out.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Mail checks, invoices, documents, and everything you need to keep your business running. Get rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS. And with the mobile app, you can take care of mailing on the go. Make the same no-brainer decisions as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up at Stamps.com with code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.